Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hey, it's Peter Ambush.
This is Kelly. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. I guess we'll be patched in a minute.
Okay.
I'm ready to go.
Okay. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. This is Leslie Gibbs of Just of Freedom. I'm sorry, apparently my host is not available at this moment. So, Ms. Kelly, could you introduce yourself to
My name is Kelly Starling Lyons, and I'm a children's book author. And my mission is to transform moments, memories, and history into stories of discovery. And my book with illustrator Peter Ambush is 1 Million Men and Me, which tells the story of the march through the eyes of a little girl who was there with her daddy.
Good evening, I'm Peter Ambush. I'm the artist, the illustrator who illustrated 1 Million Men and Me. And I guess that's about it.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot more to both of you. I apologize. I had some trouble getting through on the line. But my name is Arlie Gordon of Unity Design and the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo. I want to thank both of you for joining us tonight. I'm very excited about this conversation, simply, if for no other reason, because of the power, relevance, and historical significance of the Million Man March. Just to let our listeners know, you are listening to The Gist of Freedom. It's a weekly live online discussion that celebrates the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who are persevering in preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, and the humanities. I'd like to thank Leslie Gist Etheridge, who is a prominent author and educator, for producing this show. And again, we have two very special guests with us tonight. The author, Kelly Starling Lyons. Let me repeat that, Kelly Starling Lyons, I'm sorry, who is the author of 1 Million Men and Me, as well as the illustrator of that book, Peter Ambush. Thank you both for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Very, very welcome. And I guess we'd like to kick things off with you, Kelly. What was your reasoning? What was your motivation for writing this wonderful book?
Thank you. 15 years ago, I was at the Million Man March. I was writing about it, and I was there to interview young men who had gone and what the day meant to them. And I saw so many amazing things and was touched in so many ways, from, you know, men praying together to laughing together and hugging and seeing fathers walking with their sons. And in the midst of all of this, you know, beauty and positivity, I saw a little girl holding her daddy's hand as they walked past the reflecting pool. And her eyes were just so big and sparkling. And to me, she looked like this little princess in a sea of kings.
Wow.
And years later, excuse me, when I wanted to write for children, I thought about stories that I really felt strongly about and wanted to pass on. And the image of the little girl there with her daddy came back to me. And so I thought, wouldn't it be, you know, cool to kind of think about what the march was like for her and see it through her eyes. You know, what did she see in her father's face? What did she see in all the men who were there? You know, what did she learn about the march through being there? And how did it make her feel to be there with her father? So that was how the story started.
Okay. And you mentioned that this was a very powerful, if not profound, event for you, the Million Man March. And you certainly, I would suspect, understand the importance and, again, the relevance of making sure that our children not only know about this event, but also are engaged, as you were able and Peter was able to capture through the book, 1 Million and Me, to want to learn more about this event. Let's talk about some of the highlights of the book, and then you, Peter, we want to ask you a few questions as well, okay?
Okay, certainly.
Kelly, so take us through some of the highlights of the book from your perspective.
Well, you know, what I tried to do when I was writing is kind of see the march through my character's eyes. So I know what it felt like for me to be there, but to try to put myself in a little girl's shoes and, you know, think about what images would have really stayed with her. And so, you know, some of the images that you see in the book are the feeling she sees in her father's face, like, you know, seeing happiness glowing in his eyes and seeing tears in his eyes, you know, mm-hmm. seeing him nod and smile at men who are strangers but acknowledging them as brothers, you know, mm-hmm. and hearing those drums in the air everywhere. And, you know, feeling the kind of music of that and the poetry of being part of this moment in history, you know, seeing men as far as she could see. So I tried to take all those images and make them part of the story so that when kids read it, they can really feel like they were there too. You know, one of the things when I go into schools, most kids have never heard of it before.
Right.
And so, you know, often when I'm talking to them about it, they know what the March on Washington is. And they know who Dr. King is, and they know about the I Have a Dream speech. And when I tell them that this march was even larger than that, you know, that starts right away to draw them in. And then I usually show images, a slideshow of the march. And when they see, you know, just men as far as you can see, and when I tell them it was, you know, young and old, and it was Christian and Muslim and rich and poor, you know, they just gasp at, you know, looking at the marvel of all those men coming together in peace and in purpose.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the power of the event. Again, I think it's one of the most important contemporary events in not just Black America, but all of the United States, for that matter. And I'd just like to share with our listening audience that Kelly is also a writer for the New York Times. I didn't even know that.
I was just going to say, I actually, I'm not a writer for the Times. Way back when I used to write in Syracuse, I did some stringing for them, but I wasn't ever a staff writer. So.
Okay. Let's get to Peter, because I've had a chance to look at your website. Let's make sure we plug it. It's KellyStarlingLyons.com. That's KellyStar, like a shining star, LyngLyons.com. And we'll make sure we put it out there one more time before the end of our discussion. Okay, Kelly?
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. Peter, thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes, glad to be here.
Why don't you share with our listeners, if you'd be so kind, what motivated you? Because, I've had a chance to look at the website. I can see some of these incredible illustrations that you've captured in telling Kelly's story. And what was your impetus? What was your motivation in terms of doing such a dynamic job in capturing visually the essence and power of the event and this story?
Okay. Well, I mean, it was actually my first book illustrating completely. I worked for the company Just Us Books for several years doing covers, different mm-hmm. covers for their you know, different books that they had. They brought the manuscript from Kelly to me and asked if I would be willing to illustrate it. I said, well, I can try it. You know, I mean, I've never done it before, but I can certainly try my hand at it. I'd like to try, you know, and come up with something. And so mm-hmm. after reading it, you know, reading it, even though it was in the little girl's point of view, it sparked images and different things that came to mind on how it should be drawn. It's very expressive and intuitive. Once I started to read the different pages and the different words, it just kind of came to life in my head. So I would just make sketches, and I presented those for approval. And mm-hmm. I don't think it might have been one or two pages that they had to change or kind of suggest maybe do something a little bit different. But it kind of drew itself.
Well, you know, one of the things that I take when I look at this cover of 1 Million Men and Me is the Million Farther March that we are proudly a part of, and is a global initiative that encourages fathers to take their child or children to the first day of school at the beginning, obviously at the beginning of every school year. But the significance is to hopefully strengthen parent-student involvement throughout the school year so that we see more A's or more report cards the last day of school. And looking at your cover, I mean, I think that would, that is almost the poster that campaign. And you should definitely connect with Philip Jackson and Black Star, because I'm sure that they would see the value in this too. Let's get back to the story. If I'm not mistaken, Peter, you are actually a father too, and you use some of your personal relationships to develop the art and the artwork for this particular book. Is that true?
Well, it was my intention to use my daughter at the time. We didn't live in an isolated area, but I was isolated kind of from getting the models that I needed. And so I said, well, you know, I could probably just use my daughter. I mean, she'd be easy enough to direct and easy enough to say, you know, I mean, this is how I want you to be, this, you know, do this pose, you know, look this way. And I thought I would be more comfortable with her. The problem was that she was a little too old looking. I mean, she was about 9 years old, and she's always been a little bit older looking. And then when I presented my sketches, and actually I was going to use myself as the father. And like I said, it's easier to easy to direct my daughter, easy to direct myself. When I presented that to Justice Book, they thought, well, maybe, you know, she's a little bit too old. Can you young her up? And I said, well, that's a lot of work. I said, maybe I should try and go out and find someone who was a little bit younger that I wouldn't have to change all that much. And so I went to my church, actually, and one of my fellow choir members, he had a young daughter who was about that age, and that's her and him as the main characters. And they were willing enough to, to pose for me, and you know, we just, you know, one night we just sat down, and I just said, okay, well, here are my sketches, and I just went through page by page and said, okay, pose this way, pose this way. And a lot of times I might have something that's on my mind, you know, a certain idea of what I wanted to convey for that page. And, you know, the young girl's name was Alexis. Now, she might look a certain way or turn a certain way. I said, oh, man, that's a whole lot better than what I kind of came up with. I said, well, let's go with that pose, you know. And I just had, you know, I just had multiple photographs. And with the cover, actually, I think that's the second cover that I kind of designed for the book. And that was one of the things that the publishers wanted to change. And I said, well, okay, well, I live in Pennsylvania. My church is in New Jersey. It's about an hour away. And at that time when they wanted to make the change, I wasn't close to church. I said, well, okay, well, I need some reference photos for some of these people back in. I can go online and try and find something, someone. You know, a lot of it is just not made up out of my head, I mean, as far as my reference or what I'm trying to draw from. So I said, okay, well, maybe I'll just have to pose myself. And I got my camera, I set my camera up, and I just posed myself. So each of those men in the background, or each of the ones that are in the kind of mid-ground right behind the main characters, is me. And just, you know, just different facial expressions, you know, different hair. And, I mean, I pose for each one, but I just, you know, just change my face and everything like that. So basically, and everybody else that's in the book or fellow choir members that were kind enough to pose for me.
Okay. Well, I am looking at this cover. I would encourage our listeners to visit the website, Kelly Starling Lyons, that's KellyStarlingLyons.com, and see some of the beautiful artwork of Peter's that's associated with this book. Now, your target market or the age group for this book, Kelly, would be what, between about 5 and 10 or so?
Yes, you know, picture books, the traditional age is usually considered 4 to 8, but because the topic is the Million Man March, I mean, I've had even middle school classes use it. So I think, you know, definitely from kindergarten through elementary school and even older, You know, when I first shared the book at in Washington, I had fathers who had gone to the march, who came in, who were really touched by the story. And I think some people were even, you know, having it as a keepsake book for themselves. And I did want to just mention that Just Us Books, our publisher, is an African-American-owned children's book publisher in New Jersey, and they've been very supportive and believe very strongly in, you know, us getting this book out and sharing the legacy of the march with children. So,
yeah, and
you know.
And, you know, I think it really is, it's a painful reality that, you know, you talk about the fact that most of the children that you get to engage when you're bringing the book into schools don't know about the Million Man March.
Right.
And it really, it disheartens me because I think that too many of our children don't know our history, don't know our heritage, don't know all the wonderful contributions of Africans, not only in this country and to this country, but on a global scale. And so it's really critical that we help our children have a greater sense of self-identity, which I believe fosters self-love by sharing stories of remarkable events and remarkable people and, you know, just passing down our heritage and our history from generation to generation. I know this is something that's very near and dear to Leslie Gist. So let's talk a little bit more about the book. When you go into schools, what are some of the questions you get from the students that you speak with and to?
Well, you know, the way that I usually open up talking about the book, because as you shared about the Million Father March, I actually know Philip Jackson, and he's been really wonderful about the book, sharing it with people who he knows. I often start by talking about this father-daughter relationship because, yes, it is about the history of the Million Man March, but it also celebrates this father there with his daughter. So usually what I do is I have kids share with me special moments they've spent with fathers or father figures, like uncles or granddaddies or, you know, big cousins or teachers. And I get the most interesting, you know, and really touching responses from kids, from, you know, going to daddy-daughter dances to having a big brother take them on their first roller coaster ride to, you know, getting a hot dog with an uncle. And then I talk about, you know, Nia, my main character, going on this amazing journey with her father. And, you know, what do they think she would have felt? May I say special and, you know, pretty and, you know, loved and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, some of the questions that they ask me are, were you the child in the book? And I said no. And then I explained to them seeing a little girl there and, you know, actually seeing her there with her father and being inspired to write the story. They asked me about the Million Man March in terms of where it took place in Washington. And I think the cool thing for kids now is they're growing up with having seen the inauguration of our president. So once again, that area in Washington, the Washington Mall, which is, you know, part of history in so many strong ways with the March on Washington, the Million Man March, and then the inauguration, it kind of gives them this linkage. And it really means even more to them as they realize that this, you know, beautiful event also took place there. They asked me about who some of the speakers were, and they're always amazed to find out that there were even kids who were speakers. You know, I mean, one of the most powerful speeches was by a young man who was 12 out of Chicago. So I think all those things offer connections and, you know, kind of sparks their interest in it. And I hope they'll go home and talk to their parents about it and ask questions. When I was in D.C. at the Kennedy Center and was talking to some of the men who had gone to the march, unfortunately, some of their kids, that was their first time learning that they had been there. So what I'm hoping the book will do is kind of open conversations, you know, that we can feel really proud of this, you know, beautiful day when all these men from all walks of life came together for this special reason. And we can, as you were saying, pass this on to children, and then they can pass it on to their children.
You know, one of the things I just thought about during our discussion is the preponderance of fatherless homes in Black America. I mean, I've worked out of Detroit for about 25 years, and I know that six out of seven kids that I will talk to during the course of a day don't have a father or a male figure in the home. And has any of these type of issues come up in your discussions with children? Have you still been able to work through that void, that social void, if you will, in connecting with our youth? And in many ways, I think this could be equally important simply because of the relationship value of discussing fathers and daughters.
And that's one of the reasons why when I talk to them about it, I always say fathers and father figures. Because it is true. I mean, we have families that don't have a dad in the home. I mean, I actually grew up with one of my strongest role models being my grandfather.
Right.
But that's why I always say father figures. Because, I mean, usually kids have, you know, someone. That there's an uncle, there's a granddad, there's a preacher, teacher, mentor. So I think that's a way for me to be more inclusive and get kids just thinking about special relationships with important men in their lives.
And in the book, you capture that personal relationship between the daughter and the father as much as the excitement that is all around them? Or do you attempt to do that?
I do. I mean, I you know, share that that there's a line in there where the little girl refers to herself as their princess, you know, and she's there with all of these kings. You know, and, you know, sitting on the ground as they're kind of watching all the men go by, and it's just daddy and her. And these just, like, little moments of, you know, closeness that the two of them share, even in the midst of all these multitudes and being part of history, you know, that her dad is still making her feel special.
Peter, were you a part of the Million Man March?
Actually, I had I was unfortunate to be able to be there in person at the time. I was working at a newspaper in New Jersey, and we've got a lot of information, a lot of, you know, photos and everything that came through there. So I was able to kind of view it through the newspaper or through the media. Eyes like everyone else, but I was unfortunate to be able to get there in person.
What did this project evoke within you as you share the experience with the author, and you know, started to put these beautiful images together? What was it like for you? What experiences can you share about that?
Well, it was interesting because I don't think, Kelly, if I remember right, we ever met. We never met before the book was finished, I believe. And
right,
I think we
met after.
Right, and then we met at a book signing.
Right.
You know, somewhat after the book was published. It was very enjoyable. I mean, it wasn't any problems. I mean, I think I've heard of people having difficulties, you know, between an author and a writer. I'm pretty easygoing. So, and I take criticism very well. So, I mean, any time that anybody wanted to change something or had a different point of view or a different idea, I'm open to it. And because they might be seeing something, you know, something other than what I saw. And sometimes it works the other way around. I might see something, or I might think of something that the author didn't experience or didn't think of in the first place. But it was very, I was kind of apprehensive, like I said before. This was my first book, and I was a little apprehensive of being able to convey the flow from one page to the other with sequential art or with doing a book. From page to page, you know, you want to be able to portray, you want the flow. You don't want it to kind of have any dead spaces. So when it goes from one page, and you want it to be intriguing enough that that you keep your viewer interested. And so it actually came very easy to me, and I was happy to be able to do that. You know, a lot of the fears that I had. Just where I'm founded, and but it was very interesting, and a lot of the working with my models who were at my church, you know, just kind of strengthened and fortified, you know, my belief in fellowship between men. I mean, I'm part of my men's choir and men's fellowship there at my church, and it's a mid-sized, large church, and it just kind of fortified, you know, my belief that, you know, men can get along and they can come from all different, you know, points of life, you know, or different places, you know, different backgrounds. And it just, it was just kind of like, I guess it was, if I had been there, it probably would have been the same kind of feeling that I have when I'm with my fellow brothers at my church. And it would be nice to be able to feel that all the time, to be able to go wherever and really, hopefully, you know, one day, you know, it could be that way between all races, you know, not just the African American. I know that's where we wanted to start, and we needed it to start because it was that's where we were at that time. But I'm hoping and praying that it's changed and it's grown to encompass all colors.
You know, before that, that's a very good point. And Kelsey, I'm going to let you chime in because my next question is, let's talk about the social significance of the Million Man March outside of the book. I mean, you know, it was such a bigger than life event, if you will. And again, the sad thing is that too many of our children don't know about it. Too many adults, you know, didn't take anything away of sustenance from it that we're still carrying today. And one of the things that sort of came with me when Peter's talking about the powerful relationships he's developed in his church is that you have that replenishing. You have that social interaction and uplift on a weekly basis when you're part of a church. In many ways, that's what this Million Man March event was about an uplift of unparalleled significance among men throughout this country, typically of color, mostly of color, I'd assume. I wasn't there. But, you know, it seems like we didn't sustain the emotion. We didn't sustain that synergy. But let's talk about the social impact of the Million Man March. And I suggest that it's time for us to march again, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, you know, as a journalist at the time, one of the reasons why it was so important, I felt, for me to go is because there was so much negativity in the media about young black men who I was covering teens then. And there was so much about, you know, gangs and about fighting and about drugs and about them being more likely to go to prison than to go to college and just, you know, just story after story. And when I heard the energy and the excitement of these young men about being part of something positive that could make history, and then when I went there and I interviewed them and to hear them say that, you know, in other places if you'd bump into somebody, it might be the start of a fight, but at the Million Man March, people would say, you know, sorry, brother. You know, and
right.
just to see them witness that peace everywhere and model it, you know, really. And one of my favorite quotes from somebody who I interviewed, he was 17, he said, if it can be done one day, it can be done every day, you know, which is speaking back to what Peter was talking about. But I think that, you know, though a lot of people kind of look at the Million Man March and wonder if, you know, all those lessons from that day and all that positivity and power have been moved forward. I've interviewed people who are testaments that it has. You know, I've on the 10th anniversary when they had the Millions More Movement, I did an article for the Raleigh News and Observer, and I interviewed some men who were at the Million Man March and since have started mentoring programs and since have started, you know, black college tours that are paying it forward in their own ways, in their own communities.
Well,
you
that's
know,
good
and
to
those
hear.
Are, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean,
we have
those
about a minute left. And one of the most powerful things that I've taken from the march, and again, not being there, but being a part of it, is all of the powerful speeches that took place.
Right.
And one of which is Maya Angelou. So what we're going to do is we're going to close out. I want you, Kelly, to give everyone your contact information again. Peter, you're certainly welcome to do so. And then what I'd like to do is close tonight's show with a speech by Maya Angelou, which is one of my favorite parts of the march. Kelly, you go first, if you'd be so kind.
Wonderful, and thank you so much to you and Leslie for having us on. For the rest of the week and from last week, I'm doing a virtual tour where I'm visiting blogs and radio shows to talk about the book and about the Million Man March, and the information is on my blog, kuumba.wordpress.com, kuumba.wordpress.com, and tomorrow's feature is all about Peter, and Peter's website is PeterAmbush.com. So thank you so much for your support. Our publisher is Just Us Books. Please support their wonderful titles.
Sure, I agree. Let's support one another. Thank you both so much. Peter, is any closing remarks you'd like to make before we let Maya take us on out?
No, I was just ecstatic and just glad to be able to be a part of this and be a part of the book. And to be able to convey some of my views and ideas, you know, through the book, through the eyes of Nia. And it was certainly a pleasure working with Kelly, and it was certainly a pleasure being on your show.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. Before we go, I'd like to give props to our producer, Leslie Gist Etheridge. And we're going to listen to an excerpt of a
coming up, poet Maya Angelou.
Let's give it to Sister Maya Angelou. Our mother and poet laureate and sister and friend, give it to her. Thank you, sister.
My brothers and sons.
Love you, sister.
And grandsons and cousins and nephews, the night has been long. The wound has been deep. The pit has been dark. And the walls have been steep. Under a dead blue sky, on a distant beach, I was dragged by my braids just beyond your reach. Your hands were tied, your mouth was bound, you couldn't even call out my name. You were helpless and so was I. But unfortunately, throughout history, you worn a badge of shame. I say the night has been long. The wound has been deep. The pit has been dark. And the walls have been steep. But today, voices of old spirit sound speak to us in words profound. Across the years, across the centuries, across the oceans, and across the seas, they say, draw near to one another. Save your race. You have been paid for in a distant place. The old ones remind us that slavery's pains has paid for our freedom again and again. The night has been long. The pit has been deep. The night has been dark, and the walls have been steep. The hells we have lived through and live through still have sharpened our senses and toughened our will. The night has been long. This morning I look through your anguish right down to your soul. I know that with each other we can make ourselves whole. I look through the posture and past your disguise and see your love for family in your big brown eyes. I say, clap hands. And let's come together in this meeting ground. I say, clap hands, and let's deal with each other with love. I say, clap hands, and let us get from the low road of indifference. Clap hands, let us come together and reveal our hearts. Let us come together and revive our spirits. Let us come together and cleanse our souls. Clap hands, let's leave the preening. Stop impostering in our own history. Clap hands. Call the spirit back from the ledge. Clap hands. Let us invite joy into our conversation, courtesy into our bedrooms, gentleness into our kitchens, care into our nurseries. The ancestors remind us, despite the history of pain, we are going on people who will rise again, and still we rise. Brothers and let's give it to Sister Maya Angelou, our mother and poet laureate and sister and friend. Give it to her. Thank you, sister.
Are we off?